From the studios of WXXI, this is Backstage Pass. Until Ravel wrote Bolero, there wasn't a lot for a saxophone player to do in the world of classical music. After all these years, that's still true. So, what's a sax player to do? I'm Julia Figueres. Today on Backstage Pass, we'll answer that question and more with the award-winning Sayo Quartet, four musicians who have been blazing their own path with great success. Plenty of sax appeal next on WXXI. Welcome to Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. Backstage Pass is made possible in part by a gift from Drs. Dawn and Jack Lipson to support performance, innovation, and accessibility of the arts in the Rochester community. Today, we welcome the Sayo Quartet into our studios, and in fact, here they are with Jennifer Higdon's Bop on Classical 91.5. By Jennifer Higdon on Classical 91.5 with the Sayo Quartet. This is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. We're going to meet these wonderful sax players and talk to them for a little while now. You all study at the Eastman School of Music. Clancy Ellis, who is the tenor sax player. Clancy, why did you choose the school?
I came here because Eastman has a really well-known saxophone program, besides being just a very well-known music school. And so partly it was because of the reputation of the school, but also our professor Cheng Huan Lin and the Eastman Studio has a very, very good national reputation.
Cheng Huan Lin, let's talk about Cheng Huan. Is he tough, Siobhan?
He's definitely very tough on us, but it pays off a lot. We work very hard, and it shows, I think. And yeah, we all. It takes a little bit to get used to, but we're all grateful for it. So
Matthew is the baritone sax player, or Michael, rather. Michael Matthews is the baritone sax player. Michael, one of the things that really strikes me about Cheng Huan is he has, it feels to me, a real deep push for professionalism.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's no funny business kind of guy. He always makes sure that, you know, even past just playing the notes, that we have the attitudes and the habits of professional musicians. And he always is trying to instill those values in us, and it's super valuable. It's been very helpful for us.
Uday, you guys go out and you perform a lot on as a group, as a Sayo Quartet. So in a way, are you aware when you go out that you are ambassadors of the Eastman School of Music?
Mm-hmm, definitely. We try to do as much community performances as we can, because what people often overlook is that the Eastman School of Music was founded for the betterment of the Rochester community. And I think as a saxophone quartet, we have a particular obligation, really, to share what we can do with the rest of the Rochester community so they can enjoy the music in the same level that we do.
It always seems to me that much of the heartbeat of the city is there at the Eastman School of Music, right there in Kodak Hall and in the Eastman whole group of buildings there. How do you... How do you interpret that heartbeat, Clancy?
Well, it's very easy to see what Eastman can do. First of all, there's the community school, which many people come to and use as a springboard for the arts. But also, there are so many programs that are at Eastman, that Eastman sends out into the community. So I feel like it really is kind of the heartbeat or the center of arts in this community, at least from my perspective.
So how did this group, Clancy, get put together?
Yeah, we all came here as freshmen. We're all in the same year, and this is our third year at Eastman. And so there just happened to be four people, and of course, that's a great number for a quartet. And so we kind of talked about it over the summer and figured some things out, but we always knew ever since we got accepted to Eastman that we would be in a quartet.
How do you go about naming a quartet?
So we started that process pretty much right when we got here during orientation. I remember, like, in the George Eastman Day of Service, going to, like, Highland Park, and we were picking some weeds and just trying to brainstorm names. And, you know, we had all these finalists, but we chose Sayo because Sayo Street, Rochester, is right sort of behind, Gibbs Street and near Main Street and everything, right by our school. And our studio quartets have a tradition of naming themselves after Rochester landmarks. So we've had, like, the East End Quartet after the East End Garage, or, like, Highland Quartet, Highland Park, Fuego Quartet, Fuego Coffee. So we wanted to follow that tradition, and we love the word Sayo, so we're trying to give it a new meaning.
I want to back up for a second here. Pulling weeds, what's that all about?
Yeah, so every year, the first-year students at Eastman participate in the George Eastman Day of Service, which is where the class goes out, all of them, to just do something that makes the community better, sort of just, you know, in the line of the mission of George Eastman. So we've been working just trying to do that with music since then.
I think that's wonderful. And again, it goes back to that heartbeat of the city. So let us hear the heartbeat of this sax quartet on Backstage Pass. Joining us is the Sayo Quartet, and we'll be listening to a piece by Joel Love now called In Memoriam. This is Movement 2, Adieu on WXXI.
That's Movement to Adieu from In Memorial by Joel Love. This is Backstage Pass, and that's the Sayo Quartet performing, joining us here today. Anybody here start with an instrument that was not the saxophone? Ah, Siobhan, what did you start with?
I started on piano when I was in kindergarten. So I took lessons all throughout, up until all throughout high school and when I was younger as well.
When were you introduced to that instrument in your hand?
We got the option to choose an instrument in fourth grade. And so in third grade, end of third grade, people started trying to think of what instruments they wanted to play. And I actually wanted to play percussion, but my mother thought that it would be too noisy. And so she kind of was like, what about the saxophone? Little did she know that this is also a very loud instrument, but I kind of fell in love with it the minute that I saw it. So
you're nodding your head, Michael. Did you start with piano too?
I did. I went through that, that journey, I guess. I started in first grade, and I sort of rode that out until I got to middle school, and with the same situation as Siobhan, you know, chose the saxophone. But for me, it was just because I never realized that it was part of the band. Like, my dad was a band director, and I always went to his concerts, but I guess the saxophone sat in the back or something. So I never realized it, and I was just so fascinated. So I had to try it. I wanted to do something different. So yeah, I kind of left piano in the dust until I got back to Eastman, sadly. I love piano. I love piano music, but is it hard to practice?
Yeah, you can't carry the piano with you. Not easily, at least.
Right.
Not so portable. We have four different saxophones, so I thought we could explore all of them. And I'm going to start with you, Uday, and the thing that looks suspiciously like a clarinet, but it's not. It's the soprano sax. So did you start with the soprano sax or work your way into it?
So I actually started on the alto saxophone, which is what Siobhan plays. But when I started to get around to, I think, seventh grade, my saxophone teacher at the time was like, maybe you should try some new instruments to like broaden your perspectives on saxophone. And she brought in a soprano saxophone and a tenor saxophone to one of my lessons. And I tried both of them, and the soprano just like made my eyes light up and it made my heart glow on the inside. So I went home and I talked to my parents. I was like, I need to try soprano. And they found me like a really cheap soprano, like somewhere on Craigslist or something. And I played that for a number of years and I had a lot of fun. But I never really got that good at soprano. Until I started at Eastman, and I was playing a lot of alto at the time in my first year at Eastman, and I told Professor Chen Kuan Lin that I wanted to try playing more soprano, so he recommended a piece for me to try on soprano, which was, I think, the first movement of Bach's A minor flute partita, and I played it, and I learned that soprano is really it's a wild beast that needs to be tamed, and I spent a lot of time working on soprano, and I've grown to love it a lot. So,
are you taming it successfully?
Yeah, that's the goal, you know, the audience is the judge of that, but I can only try.
You're from San Jose.
Yes.
And the Sayo Quartet toured Northern California. So was it anywhere near your hometown?
Indeed, yeah. So the tour started because my high school band director, Michael Boitz, he invited us to spend a week in California and work with the students at the high school where I went to, Saratoga High School. So once he invited us, I knew that we had to do something. We couldn't just go there and just do that. So I contacted a lot of other band directors in the area that I knew, and we actually played at five different schools during our week there, and we spent a lot of time working with the students there, and then we put together a saxophone ensemble with the students at Saratoga High School, and we played a concert with them at the end of that week. We played a couple of movements from Edvard Grieg's Peer Gynt Suite, and we played The Melody Shop by Carl King. In a recital format with the students at Saratoga High School. And it was a really great reception. There was a lot of people there, and it was a really good opportunity for us to meet people on the West Coast and for people on the West Coast to hear us and for people at the high school level to hear a college-level saxophone group and see what music can really be like if you continue past the high school level.
You are all in the Eastman Saxophone Project, and the ESP was just on live from Hochstein, actually performing the Peer Gynt Suite. Clancy, was that the arrangement that you gave the high school kids to play?
Actually, I made a separate arrangement for the high school students, just because I think we didn't have much time in California. We had a week, and so we actually went there, and I conducted the saxophone ensemble. And we had to get, you know, something together in a very short amount of time. And so I did make kind of an easier transcription, but, you know, it was still very respectful to the music.
You know, back in the day when I was in high school and dinosaurs ruled the earth, the saxophone was the cool instrument. Is the saxophone, Michael, still the cool instrument in high school?
In high school? Okay, so I think that, you know, the classical saxophone world, we tend to kind of be an enclave sometimes. Like, we tend to have our own, you know, little nerdy things that we obsess over and maybe appear a little cliquish outside of the instrument. So, you know, the high school I went to was an arts school, so there was lots of instrumentalists there. And I got to say, the classical saxophonists, we were kind of like pretty off doing our own thing. I don't really know what they thought of us. Maybe they thought we were just nerds, but we were having a good time.
You actually are from Rochester, Siobhan. So you have a slightly different take on the world of Eastman and music in Rochester because you were on the inside. You already knew what it was all about. What was it? It seems to me that Rochester is just filled with great high school bands.
Yeah, I definitely have to say I think I'm very lucky to be able to say that I grew up in Rochester because the music scene is fantastic, and all of the music teachers, like so many of them, come from Eastman, and it's such a great school. And even all the other music schools like Nazareth and like Crane School of Music and Ithaca, like there's so many people that are coming from those areas, and it's just so fantastic to be able to work with them.
One of the things that happens here in Rochester during the Jazz Fest is that the high school jazz bands all get to play out on Jazz Street. Did you get to do that?
I did do that, yeah. It's a lot of fun, and it's fun for like to be able to play for a large crowd, and it's just kind of like the first experience to be able to do that and have like people there that you may not know that come up to you afterwards and discuss things. It's great. It's a great experience.
We're talking to and listening to the Sio Quartet on Backstage Pass. And we listened to a piece now by Alexander Glazunov, who wrote a lot of lovely music for saxophone, including this. His saxophone quartet will be listening to the second movement on Classical 91.5. The second movement of the Saxophone Quartet by Alexander Glazunov was played for us by the Sayo Quartet here on Backstage Pass. We're talking to the group, and I'm going to go back to you, Siobhan. I know we just left you, but back on mic you go, because you're the sole woman in this quartet. Yeah, you're it. Is there a gender gap in saxophone?
Yes, there definitely is. There's only a few female saxophone professors, and I'm one of two females right now in our studio. Like, there's just not, and that's like pretty common in across the country. It's not just like here. So it's kind of difficult. We do have a lot of role models though, which is great. So
how do you make the case? Because eventually you're going to be going out there into the world. How do you make the case to a girl that she should pick up the sax?
It's a great instrument. And I feel like as women, we tend to take a step back and kind of, because we second guess ourselves a lot, I feel like. And we just shouldn't, and keep going and pursue our dreams. And it doesn't matter what other people tell us that we can or can't, or it doesn't matter if that's not what the field looks like right now. Like, we can change that. Things can change.
So who are your role models? You said you had great women role models. Who are they?
Probably my biggest is Nikki Roman. She was a DMA student in our studio and was our quartet coach for a few years. And now she's currently teaching over in Wisconsin. So Carrie Kaufman is another one. She's the professor at Hart School of Music. So both of them are just fabulous, and especially Nikki, because we have like a personal connection. It's just really nice to be able to see like where she's gone over the years and how she's gotten there.
Now, you're more than just a performance major at the Eastman School of Music. You're also studying audio engineering. So that sounds busy.
Yes. I'm very busy. There's a lot of classes that fill up my day. But I enjoy doing both. The engineering is a lot of fun. I've always enjoyed math and science. And with the audio engineering, I'm combining both and figuring out how I can fit music and like the math and science into one. So it's great.
Tell me about the alto sax. A range, what's the range of it? What does it do? This isn't the one that you usually hear in jazz, is it?
It's kind of common in jazz. Probably say like alto and tenor are most common in jazz. But this is, the alto saxophone is very common. It's what everyone starts on as a child. Like when you're learning to play saxophone, you learn to play the alto. It has like a middle range, but it can play pretty high. So
you want to play any others?
Other sax. Because the fingerings are all the same, so we can all technically play all of them. I do play soprano, I play that in ESP, and I'll
look
play
out it. Day.
Yeah, and I'll play. I've played tenor and barre in the Eastman Wind Ensemble before, but I really enjoy the alto. It's just very nice.
Now the tenor, your tenor player is Clancy Ellis, and you're here because of Clancy Ellis. He's the one who contacted me and said, I'd like to be a backstage pass with this group I'm in. Clancy, you studied in France, yes?
This summer, I actually studied in Germany.
In Germany?
Yeah, Germany. It was a great group of teachers. And there was Claude Delong, who is from the Paris Conservatory. He's kind of the saxophone role model of all saxophonists, I think, is Claude Delong. But also Arno Bornkamp from the Netherlands, and then Jan Schulte-Bunert, who is from Germany. So it was a great mixture of teachers.
Is there a difference between European saxing and American saxing?
I think totally, yeah.
Really? What is it?
Mostly, I think the sound quality is, if you compare, a big American saxophonist with a European saxophonist, I think they just have different ideas of what sound should be. But also, I think there's kind of a big difference in the education systems, just European conservatories versus some American conservatories. It just, you take a little bit of a different route.
Which is?
I would say that there's so many academic classes and such a big academic focus at some American conservatories, and I'm sure there is in Europe too, but from my experience with talking with professors over there, it's so much more performance-oriented and just many, many, many opportunities to get out and play.
What about the impact of military bands? And I'll bring you into this as well, Michael. The military bands, I know you studied with a staff sergeant, and military bands are renowned. Why are they so good, Clancy?
I think they can be extremely selective of who they let in. And so you get just the cream of the crop when it comes to musicians, and that's very evident. As you said, we studied with Staff Sergeant Doug O'Connor, who was here. He got his DMA here, and he came in for Chen Kwan's sabbatical, and we got to study with him, and he's just a fantastic teacher and performer.
Was he very different from Chen Kwan?
Doug does have a very different teaching style, and he actually, he had only taught at the college level for maybe a year or two, and so it was still like he was still like I think he was still like establishing his teaching style with us, and I felt like the way that he's different from Professor Lin is that I feel like Doug O'Connor is not afraid to make people feel uncomfortable, to make them push their boundaries to perform better than they thought they were able to. Like, I remember one studio class, one of our good friends, Ye Wong, she was getting over some performance anxiety. And so Doug O'Connor's solution to this was have everybody in the studio come, like, jump around her and sing what she's playing at her while she's playing and turn the lights on and off and just to, like, simulate this really hectic environment and stuff like that. So he has, like, some very interesting methods, and he just has some really interesting and unique perspectives on musicality.
The Saya Quartet won the 198th Army Band Solo and Ensemble Competition, right, Uday?
Indeed, yeah.
So what was that like?
It's a very... very good competition in my mind. Siobhan actually participated in the competition when she was in high school, so it was nice to get some other perspectives on how it was.
So
but
you had the inside thread on this.
Yeah.
Yes.
But so the way the competition works is I think you play like three short pieces for a panel of judges from the 198th Reserve Band. And after you play it, they actually give you feedback and they work with you on how to make it better for the next performance. So not only is it a chance for us to compete against some other great chamber groups in the Rochester area, but we also get to improve because they give us direct feedback after we play. And it was really great for us. We participated when we were freshmen, and it was our first competition that we ever did ever. And it was like a really good, like mellow, low pressure, great learning experience type of competition for us to do. And to win it again, or to win it when we participated our second year, sophomore year last year, was even better. It's like a cherry on top.
Yeah, well, there's another cherry on top of all of this because you just won a huge competition, which is the MTNA. Is that the Music Teacher National Association? All right, so you just won this. like the whole enchilada. It goes in steps, though, right, Clancy?
Yeah, the first step is kind of a state round, and then it moves to a regional round. And this year, we just had to send in a video. We didn't have to travel for the regional round, but eventually everyone who passes that goes to the national round, which this year was held in Spokane, Washington.
Did you feel, as you passed through, Siobhan, each round, did you feel more pressure each time?
Yeah, I think definitely. It was, well, because we participated in this also last year, and as sophomores, it was very scary because we're competing against grad quartets, and we'd never done a big competition like this before. So I feel like this year, it was a little bit less stressful because we knew what to expect while we were going through it. But yeah, it was still a lot of pressure because we wanted to do well. We felt like there was a chance that we could do well. So,
what was that moment, Clancy, like when they called your name?
I can't say. I mean, I want to say it was a surprise, and it definitely was. I know that we put our best foot forward, and so by the time the announcement came around, it just was really dependent on how the other groups did. And of course, at that level, everyone plays very, very well. But it was just exhilarating to hear that we had done this, and we get to come home with a first place medal in our hands.
Congratulations to all of you on that. Now we hear this award-winning quartet play a work called Le Bal. It's by Thierry Escaich. You're listening to Backstage Pass.
Thank you.
Le Bal by Thierry Escaich. That was the Sayo Quartet. This is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. Uday, was this one of the pieces you played for your big competition?
Indeed, yes. This was our closer.
This was your closer. I have to tell you, I just loved watching that. You were all so really clearly connected with each other. Now, you work without music. Does that, from memory, just like the ESP does that change drastically what you do? Does that inform your presentation, Uday?
Yes, for sure. I mean, obviously, when you play without music, there's no stands in the way, so you can see us easier. But one of the things I really love about playing from memory, especially in this piece, is that we can add choreography. So there's some instances where there's like someone who's playing something like really cool. So we'll put them like in the front, right in the middle. They can walk forward so that the audience can clearly see what's going on. And then there's some instances where someone's playing something that's like kind of sneaky or like a little bit like in the background. So there's one spot even in the piece where I actually just turn around and I face backstage when I'm playing from memory, so that it's really obvious that I'm playing something that doesn't really need to be in the way, and it kind of adds like a sort of ghostly effect to it. So there's all sorts of little staging changes that we can do when we play from memory, in addition to adding the fact that you can actually see us clearly and you can see us communicating with each other.
It seems to me that one of your big movers in this group is actually your baritone sax player. Michael, you move a lot. And you're kind of sneaky with a very big thing.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, you know, as the baritone player, we often get like things setting the tempo or like more steady parts. So, you know, in addition to trying to reflect that, you know, musically with my playing, it's sometimes helpful to communicate and visually, especially when we get up out of the stands. It just allows us to play more together. And I think our phrasing is more unified. So I try to move. I try to, you know, reflect what I'm playing with my movement. And I think the rest of the quartet shares in that as well.
You play the biggest instrument in the group. Now, is the weight of that thing an issue?
It certainly is. You know, maybe I'm a little baby because, you know, Uday plays bass in ESP and that's a little heavier. But, you know, playing this hours and hours every day, it kind of does hurt my back. Like there are, especially in like the peak of the year, I just like, I'm dying to get in the bed at the end of the night. So I recently, last year, purchased this thing called a breathtaking strap. And it's got like this interesting little second strap. It's hard to explain. If you've ever seen a saxophone neck strap, it doesn't look like anything you've ever seen. But basically, it takes the weight from directly off of my back and my shoulders. So luckily, I think Clancy's got one on too. So we've got these little things to make long rehearsals just a little bit easier.
You clearly did not start with that instrument. At what point did somebody put that instrument into your hands and say, hey, Michael, give this one a shot?
So it started in middle school, and I was just horrified because I'd never seen a saxophone that large, and I was like, I don't even know how to hold this. So, yeah, obviously that was kind of a futile attempt, still, you know, learning the fundamentals. It didn't really go well trying to pick up this instrument, but coming back to it now, you know, in college, it was really the first time I seriously played it, and I think the guidance I had and the instruction and just also the exemplary baritone saxophonist that we've had in the studio have just been really helpful, and you know, always having somebody to look forward to, somebody to ask for guidance. But I've definitely tried to grow into it. It's a heavy instrument, breaking my back, but you know, it's a great instrument.
You are now going into your senior year, is that right? Now you're rising juniors, every one of you, and you started together as freshmen. So this has been an extraordinary journey for you, starting together. And you'll end together as well. And then what happens after that, Clancy?
Well, yeah, like you said, it's been a great 3 years, and we're looking forward to this last year together. But we all definitely have our own separate paths ahead of us, I think, both in terms of just where we want to go and also what we want to do. Speaking for me personally, I really want to study orchestral conducting after Eastman. And so I've been kind of doing that on the side, and many other, you know, all of these people in my quartet, they've been doing things, you know, formally on the side or just kind of just for fun. But we all have our own separate ways, I think, after this.
I know you've been studying conducting at the Eastman School of Music, and you studied with Mark Powell, well, now Dr. Mark Powell.
That's right, yeah, doctor.
What has that done for you as a conductor? How has it helped you to learn this skill?
Well, Dr. Powell, the recently named Dr. Powell, is a fantastic teacher, and I meet with him and kind of on an individual basis of what I need as far as conducting lessons. But I think it's helped much more than just the skill of conducting. I think you know, there's so much communication involved in conducting, and we've really worked on that. And of course, I can bring that into the Sayo Quartet, and we can all communicate better, I think, just from our outside experiences.
Uday, what is your final path?
You know, I can't be sure. I'd be lying if I told you I know exactly what I'm doing, but right now, the goal is to continue studying saxophone with a master's degree in saxophone. And I'm looking at a variety of schools for where to do that. But right now, I'm just kind of trying to find where I want to go, what the professor's like, what the program is like, and see if it's like I can, you know, make that happen.
Siobhan?
For me, I go back and forth. I definitely want to continue my schooling and go get my master's, but whether it's in saxophone or engineering, who knows yet.
That's a great choice to have to make. That's an awesome choice. Your dad, you said, Michael, is a band leader, right?
That's correct.
Going to follow in his footsteps, yes or no?
No, I am not. I'm afraid I'm not going to be a band director. However, I'm going to continue with saxophone, much like Uday. We're going to continue with our studies, and I'm going to continue studying saxophone. Hopefully, maybe collegiate saxophone professing will be in the future. We'll see.
It's been a pleasure having all of you here. Thank you very much for joining us on Backstage Pass. Our executive producer and director is Gene Fisher. Our audio technicians are Andrew Croucher and Robert Braden. Our producer and host, Julia Figueres. Backstage Pass is made possible in part by a gift from Drs. Dawn and Jack Lipson to support performance, innovation, and accessibility of the arts in the Rochester community. This is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.